This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row, studios in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
Oh, there's a little bit of construction.
A little
going
bit of
on.
Drilling going on in the background.
In the crap part of Soho. They're trying to make the crap part of Soho even crapper.
Oh, maybe a little less crap. There's a bit of a gentrification going on in the crap part
it's
of Soho.
Unclear. There
Rog.
Is a there's a man on a platform just yeah. below Devo's window.
Yeah.
We have a very whiny. It sounds like we're at the dentist yeah. in the background.
I think it could be Twelman.
Devo wanted me, won't let me pour burning oil in the medieval fashion upon it through a murder hole.
I never
like
said
to
you
drill.
Couldn't do it. I just pointed out that our windows don't open.
I always find that terrifying when you go to castles and they always point to the that's the murder
ladders
hole from
and
which they used to pour
and
burning oil.
Burning oil.
Terrifying. Thank yeah. God we don't live in those days, yeah. Devo.
I like catapults. I like the idea of those medieval catapults that would throw sort of the boulders of burning oil over the fortresses. You had to be proper hard to fight in those battles.
I think a lot about being besieged. I often think about what I'm saying. You know what they used to do? I read about this recently. They would often fly over the castle walls by catapult.
Yeah.
Disease cows that were dead so that disease would take hold in the... You're in it for the long term. That's your strategy.
You are. You're thinking long game. Yep. You really don't like these people. And you're sure that your children won't like these people either.
That is a Sam Allardycean approach to sieging.
I like it.
I'll tell you what other era we didn't live in. The Mad Men era, David.
No, we didn't. Well, maybe the later. I lived in the later Mad Men years,
In the season. So I love meeting Matt Wheeler. Yeah. If you didn't see it, he was on the show last night.
Yeah.
And he is a beautiful, beautiful bloke. Three bald
well,
blokes.
He's bald. We love a bald.
In a tiny panic room.
Yeah.
Someone tweeted in, it was like seeing half a dozen eggs. Just fill his screen. Matt Wiener, he talked about the Wiener. Secret of success. Is it Wiener or Wiener?
Yeah, I said to him at the beginning, is it Wiener or Wiener? As though I really should have researched that before we went on the air. But I checked the Premier League pronunciation guide and that really didn't help at all. Especially because we've been getting Schmeichel wrong for like 25 years, Roger. It's Schmeichel.
Who
I don't trust
that?
Any of the...
Did Matt Wiener tell you that?
No, one of the commentators on NBC told me that.
Did he go Wiener or Wiener?
Wiener.
Why would he go Wiener? It's really a Sophie's choice.
It is.
Do you Wiener, want to be
Wiener? And then he quoted his gym teacher, his wrestling coach from high school, who would call him Wiener, and he would tell him to stop playing grab ass, Wiener.
Yeah.
I love that.
And that is the secret of success. He never did stop playing grab ass, David.
No, he's professional
and
grab ass.
He also talked about his secret of success being about surviving failure. Expect failure, but survive it. He's really a philosopher poet.
Yeah.
We had a long conversation with him, which I'd say if you're a writer or you're a creative, is possibly one of the more interesting things we've done in a long, long time, as everything else is utter crap. I think we're going to release it as a special pod in Mad Men finale week. But what a beautiful, beautiful play. He joined us in our first week of Leaning to Linen, David.
Oh, Leaning to Linen.
Hashtag Lean to Linen.
Well, you've been leaning to linen a little bit more than me, Rog.
It's a fabric. I've got to admit, David, it once filled me with fear. I don't know how you feel about linen.
Well, linen's changed. You know, they have blends these days. They don't crease as much as they used to. Used to be much cooler. The linen, certainly the linens we grew up with in England,
Rog. Oh, you're not kidding.
They were basically designed for tablecloths and napkins. And you made a suit out of that or a jacket out of that, it creased so badly.
So, I mean, linen has changed.
Yeah.
In the same way as Nigel Pearson has changed.
Yeah, similar.
Because when I was 12, Davo,
yeah,
I fell in love with Thomas Dolby, the musician.
Uh-huh.
Google him. And I read in an interview that he only wore linen. So I only wore linen. Or tried to. Linen is a tough fabric.
It used to get so creased, Rog, that your pants, if you're like a 33... you know, leg, which I am, and you bought 33 leg linen pants, they would be 30 to 30 and a half after 2 hours of wearing it. So everything would be too short.
It's a complicated, it's confounding the fact it looked so good on the hanger as a kid, but within minutes on my body, it looked like a bundle of wrinkles.
Yeah.
Within hours, I looked like I'd just emerged from a Romanian orphanage in the Ceausescu era.
Uh-huh.
And then Kent of Freeman Sporting Club, he suggested that for spring we lean to linen once I'd started to sweat through my tweed.
Uh-huh.
I've got to say that I think they cut it with some silk now, the fabric, David.
Yeah.
And it holds up like a warrior. I'd love to hear about other people's experiences
with linen. Has living worms within it, probably, constantly they're constantly ironing out the creases.
I thought it was just my nipples tingling from Everton's performance.
You look good
this week.
In your linen, Rog. You look good. I have bought a couple of linen jackets. I will be sporting them later. My tweed jacket's just arrived from Freeman Sporting Club, though, Rog.
For next winter. What are we going to do this summer? It's so complicated. Forget this summer. I'm all about this weekend, David.
Pacquiao Mayweather.
Oh, I'm quite excited.
Really?
Yeah.
It's very late. Past my bedtime, this fight. And it affects golf on Sunday morning pretty heavily.
Yeah.
Because you have to stay up and watch the fight. I won't be able to play golf early on Sunday morning.
Team money.
Because I've got to play early
it's
before
the It's not
about
you. It's about supporting
game.
The people that come in our planet room.
I know, at GFOP, you're right.
Still smells of rose water from when Manny came in here. He's such a sweet-smelling man. I can't believe the same guy that came into our planet room and talked about his love of the Scottish.
Yeah, the Scottish. He did have a, he's did have
go
a very good Scottish brogue.
Acts of incredible violence, Davey.
Yeah.
But that, I've been looking up acts of violence. I've started a lot of, I guess the sieging stuff was part of it. But at Sanchez14 sent in an article from England about that's got me in, really in the mood for the Manny fight. It's cheered me up no end. It's from The Telegraph, and it's called Court Refuses Trial by Combat.
The court, Rog, I love this story, has rejected a 60-year-old man's attempt to invoke his ancient right to trial by combat rather than pay a £25 fine. That's about $35 for a minor motoring offence. Trial by combat. Excellent. Leon Humphreys remained adamant yesterday. It would be a Leon Humphreys, Rog, that his right to fight a champion nominated by the Driver and Vehicle Licensing Agency, the DVLA, was still valid under European human rights legislation. He said it would have been a reasonable way to settle the matter. Magistrates sitting at Bury St. Edmunds on Friday had disagreed, and instead of accepting his offer to take on a clerk from Swansea with samurai swords, Gurkha knives or heavy hammers, quote, fined him £200 with £100 cost. Humphreys, an unemployed mechanic, said, I was willing to fight a champion put up by the DVLA, but it would have been a fight to the death.
Oh, Dave.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. I love the level of detail he put into it. Gurkha knives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good.
I think that might be, Leon Humphreys may be one of the guys that set up our Reddit.
Yeah.
Sounds like it.
It does. With Akshay,
So that's next weekend, Manny Pete.
Yeah.
Highlight of last weekend from a sporting perspective could only be one thing.
My father's visit to the gym for the first time in his life on his 86th birthday.
Musty. I think that's on our other pod today in Musty Athletic Pursuits.
Just very, very quickly, my father on his 86th birthday went to a gymnasium for the first time in his entire life. And he had three conditions when he went to the gym that he gave them. One, he only had 30 minutes a week, doesn't have any more time to go to the gym than 30 minutes a week. Secondly, he would not wear workout gear. He would only be going in his own clothes to work out. And thirdly, his 30 minutes a week, he only wants to work his biceps. They accepted, and Trev is now working out once a week.
Number two confused me because I mentally got this picture of Trev dressed up like Olivia Newton-John in the movie Physical.
I would have loved
with that beautiful
headpiece
and that gorgeous Leica.
I'll work on it. Sorry, no, what was the sporting event last weekend, Roger?
Could only be one thing, David. Pundits at the pub.
Oh, pundits at the pub. I've tried to block it out, Roger. I'm still a bit hurt.
Really?
Yeah.
What, that we weren't invited?
Yeah.
Well, they wanted to make it good so they wouldn't go near us.
We would have done the drinks, Roger. We would have made Carl Martino with Shirley Temple.
By the way, I can just say, we'll break it down into the dimensions in a second because there was a lot of drinks, but oddly enough, no one touched any of them.
Yeah, continuity.
I believe it was a film about football in the same way Orwell's Animal Farm was about horses and pigs. I've watched it many times since it first aired, and it seems
how many times?
11. And it's well, I watched it 11 times while waiting for the Men in Blazers show to come on last night.
The
Islanders and the Capitals. Yeah, and I'm not saying the NHL overtime show is not riveting television.
Yeah,
which it is. There's no doubt. Jeremy Roenick, I've got to say, can I just tell you?
Yeah.
He is the kind of person that would hear that Leon Humphreys wants trial by combat and say, all right, Leon Humphreys, over here. Good. I don't even need a Gurkha knife.
Yeah.
But, God, it's endless. It's bloody endless. And I'm watching about 11 times during the overtime review of the Capitals Islanders game.
Yeah. We should just give up and start talking about hockey, not football, Roger.
I think we're going to have to. It's the only way we can get onto NBC Sports.
Yeah.
But I think Pundits at the Pub was actually, on a deeper symbolic level, about a pay into human longing and the need for man and woman not to be alone. That's what I thought as I watched it.
What particular aspect of Pundits at the Pub had you thinking that?
watch it again.
Yeah, and I'll understand it.
I can't tell you. I don't think you've taken it seriously, yeah. And I think you've misunderstood it. I think you got kind of your mind was thrown from really understanding it because of the familiarity of the scene. We've all been down there, haven't we?
Oh, everybody's been down that pub
At the sausage fest down at the Voozer. Rebecca Lowe.
Yeah.
I think it was a pint of vodka orange she had in front of her. Carl Martino thoughtfully waiting for the topics to change to Travel Channel shows. Not a single drunk on camera.
Yeah.
Not one of them.
Yeah.
And show me an English pub where there's not a single drunk in a group of 10 people. Yeah. Doesn't exist. That was where I thought it fell down on verisimilitude.
Yeah. No one was thrown out.
Although Robbie Earl was clearly necking down Jaeger bombs in between. Here's what I don't understand, and you'll explain this to me because you're Mr. Television Producer.
Yeah.
Why was Arlo, Lord Arlo, the great Arlo, who's done so much for football in this country, why was he awkwardly poised at the back behind the fence, like quarantined off?
Well, I lost count. There were, what, 15, 16 of them down at the pub? It's just very tough doing panel talk, Rog. It sucks up a lot of cameras.
Yep.
You can't have an ISO camera on everyone. So you need people to appear in the same...
Especially when
you
got two or three on Kyle.
Yeah, exactly. Right, that's contractual. It's in his rider, Rod.
Don't shoot him from the left. Don't shoot me from the left.
So Arlo needs to be sort of within that shot, within that proximity. And then they take him on his ISO and it feels like he's there.
I just assumed he voluntarily went there so he was in prime position for the jukebox so he could slip off and just pop on his beloved Kasabian.
Yeah, go and play or turn on the Mac. Yeah, he loves those.
We've never talked about this. Do you have favourite jukebox tunes, go-to tunes on that jukebox that must be played? You cannot resist the jukebox.
Do you know, this is not a song I've ever owned. It's not a song I love when it comes on the radio.
I'll never put a song I own on there.
I love.
Why would you put in a dollar to play a song you own?
But there are two songs I love on a jukebox.
Yeah.
Elton John, Benny and the Jets. Just a fantastic
great
jukebox
drinking
song.
Great drinking song.
Just a fantastic jukebox song.
And when you put it on everyone's heads...
Yeah, exactly. And Nena, 99 Luftballon.
In the original German version.
Yes, the German version. Yeah. You cannot play the English one. Yeah. You have to play the German one.
But I've got to say, whoever did the translation on that did a very poor job.
Yeah, I know.
Very poor job. In its native Teutonic tongue, it's beautiful.
Yeah, much better.
I think my go-to songs on a jukebox would be as follows. The Baser by the Pixies.
Yeah.
Let Down, Radiohead. I love any song that builds slowly until the singer can't sing anymore and then guitars just take over. It's like Everton season. Little Wing, Stevie Ray Vaughan. And then at the end of the night, do you have an end of the night closing time kind of song?
Not a mellow one. I like Shaggy's first single. Was that the original Shagtastic or whatever it was? His original single, Shaggy single, is a great closer.
Oh, not as good as I Want You by Elvis Costello. I've got to say, either Shaggy, David, sets a beautiful end of the night, because Shaggy, also a Panic Room person, we have to be utterly loyal to.
Yeah, him and Manny.
Definitely.
I dream that he's going to be in Manny's Corner. I love the idea that Manny's Corner is
full of
other
GFOPs.
Yeah.
That would be
Billy
amazing.
Bean running the stats.
Oh, Andy Summer from The Police, walking down with a guitar in front of him.
It would be so good.
It would be chilly amazing.
It would be so good.
Either Shaggy Baby song Horse. To finish. Oh, Alex Morgan. Get Alex Morgan in the ring with you.
Yeah, exactly.
You cannot but win. I Want You by Elvis Costello. It will probably be my closing song.
Yeah.
But I think they didn't play closing songs on this because in my head, Davo, I believe there's a second hour of Pundits at the Pub. It's not got an air date yet.
The director's cut.
No, I think they've shot it.
Are you looking for the cutting room floor?
I think they've shot it already, and there's going to be a part two by
Pundits at the Pub.
Yes!
Or Pundits at More Pub.
Pundits down the pub again.
Yeah.
And it's going to be the one where the drink
kicks
in.
Pundits still at the pub.
Yeah, the drinks kick in.
Yeah.
Conversation gets a bit edgier.
Yeah.
And one of the pundits, I won't say who, but let's just say it was a Robbie.
Yeah.
Glasses, another pundit. Again, I won't say who, but maybe it was another Robbie.
Yeah.
And it all just kicks off, Davo, in the bar, like Begbie at the beginning of Trainspotting. Oh, that lassie got glass. No one leaves here till we found out what bastard did it. It'd be amazing. Amazing television.
I love their voices so much, though. I love the voices of these people. I've actually stopped listening to what they're saying most of the time, and I just love listening to them talk. They could be talking about anything, and I'd be enjoying it.
Oh, I'd love a Robbie Musto book on tape to be the last thing I hear before I go to sleep at night.
That'd be good. Yeah, well, that would soothe me. That would send me to sleep. But the difficult thing for
my
them...
fragile confidence.
You know, thinking about that, like pundits, the art of punditry has its place because it exists between games, between action. is that you come out of action and then you have a talk about it. And the slightly disembodied nature of pundits at the pub is that it's not surrounding game action. And because it was taped when they're in England, I assume, a few weeks ago, it was sort of non-topical punditry, not surrounded by game action. But they are so good. They are such talent. They have such good voices, such a mixture of experience, both in the studio, on the field of play, in the broadcast booth. They've seen so much. I just really could listen to them talk about anything.
I'd be surprised if it doesn't win an Emmy.
Yeah.
Talking about Emmys.
Craig Ferguson won an Emmy.
Mazel tov to John Johnson.
Yeah.
Our live show
producer.
He won
an Emmy.
He got nominated for, I think, 1.5 million Tonys.
Wow.
Today. Very, but none for us. We were shut out again, Dave. Cruelly denied.
Did Shaggy get a Tony as well? Got a few Tony nominations?
I think
nominations.
He got a load for This Is Our Youth, Skylight.
Seven for Skylight. I haven't even heard of that.
And he did that Larry David one, Fish. What's it called? Fish in the... I went to see that last week.
Yeah.
And it was amazing.
That
was
play
amazing.
Is about one of my best mates. It's about the story that happened to Lloyd Braun, one of my best mates.
Really?
So I heard the story before I heard there was a play.
Really? That whole...
The whole story about one of my friends. You have to tell me what happened.
Does Lloyd Braun like being the subject matter of a Larry David play?
I think he was given some kind of a credit. I believe he's been rewarded.
Oh,
in
if
some
he has royalties,
he likes it a lot. Him and Larry are great mates. They play a lot of golf with each other. Okay, Rog, enough with that.
We'll save it for our other podcast, Today in Lloyd Braun.
Yes, Blazers at the Pub. We've got a packed show. We break down a goalless yet not soulless Arsenal-Chelsea affair filled with penalty appeals, penalty controversies, Rog, and the 59 seconds from Burnley versus Leicester that capture so perfectly the cruelty of the English Premier League.
Broke our hearts.
And life in the North. We meet our two new Premier League friends, Watford and Bournemouth, Rog, and we welcome to the pod the US men's national team's big man on campus. Well, it would be if he didn't go to Stanford University, Rog, and Seattle's own Jordan Morris.
Oh, Stanford okay. Messi.
Okay, to the football. Let's crack open a Guinness, Rog.
See, we don't need pundits at the pub. We've got our own beers.
We do. I really need a Shirley Temple right now. Oh. Cheers, Rog.
It's a Bournemouth.
Yeah, and Watford. Okay, Rog, we are now either 33 or 34, 38s. Through the season, depending on who you support. In the Royal Rumble that is the Premier League, relegation-prone sides are resorting to eye gouges and kicks to the crotch, while Chelsea only has to stand in the corner and make sure nothing catastrophic happens.
Oh, the smile on your face when you say that is sickening.
Well, no, I was actually thinking that the eye gouges and kicks to the crotch pretty much refer to Chelsea as well, Rog. Arsenal 0, Chelsea 0. The league leaders and their closest pursuers battle to a goalless draw, thanks in large part to two men, Jose Mourinho and referee Michael Oliver, the former through defensive pragmatism that drew chants of boring, boring Chelsea. The latter by turning down not one, not two, but three penalty appeals. If Chelsea win midweek at Leicester and next Sunday against Palace, they clinch the title, Rog.
Oh, Dave, do you remember last October? What were we treated to? A heavyweight fight.
It was a magnificent almost fight.
Two managers shoving each other. Ties were flipped with menace.
Oh, against noses, against French noses.
In comparison, Davo, this was more like watching two boxers enter a ring and proceed to circle each other for 12 rounds, clinching occasionally, trying to tie each other up, but without landing any punches whatsoever.
It was tame, Rog.
It was tame. Yeah. I mean, the fascinating backdrop to this game is that Jose Mourinho has never lost as an opposition coach against Arsene Wenger in any competition.
Yeah.
Won 7, drawn 6, lost 0.
Yeah.
Before the game, he said, for me, he's not my rival. I don't feel that. He's a manager of a big club in a city where I work and live. Same objectives.
Yeah.
He's a colleague. Yeah. He's a lesser colleague, but he's not a rival. Is that how you felt going into this?
Well, I mean, he's definitely got his number. I mean, look, I've said widely, and I'll still say, Arsenal are capable of playing the best football in the Premier League this season. But Chelsea's skill, Chelsea's quality as a side, is one, they're not going to let you play football. And two, they have Eden Hazard. And Eden Hazard takes up, and I think you see this if you watch the game from that perspective, the lack of balance that Eden Hazard causes other teams as they have to surround him. It just unsyncopates them, Rog. It outpassions them. And it's very, very difficult for them to play against that.
Because for me, the most fascinating Chelsea moment was not Eden Hazard, who had a slightly odd game, and we'll talk about that in a second. It was all Mourinho. This was an all Mourinho all the time. I mean, from the very beginning, Davo, the moment of the game for me happened before kickoff.
And I found it mesmerising.
I found it one of the most remarkable, it was subtle, but it was remarkable, Jose Mourinho psychological moments. Jose elected before the game to enter the Emirates.
Alone.
The hostile Emirates. The seething bear pit Emirates. He elected to walk out to his seat in his dugout on supposed enemy territory early and alone,
yep,
without an entourage, and he proceeded to sit.
Without his wingmen.
Yeah, no wingmen. I mean, why would you do that? Why would you do it? Nature means you walk out with your posse to show them we're here.
That's how you feel strong. That's how you feel strong.
He decided to get out super early and sit on his own in a completely empty dugout, ignoring the heckles of the Arsenal fans who surrounded him, showing he has no fear of Arsenal, their fans, or their selfies. I mean, this was a gentleman brilliantly eager to show the world he holds everything Arsenal in contempt.
Suija not bothered. Am I not bothered? That's what he was really saying.
Yeah, I mean, he's also saying what Aristotle said, whosoever is delighted in solitude is either a wild beast or a god. And I'm starting to think, Davo, Jose Mourinho is a bit of both of those two things. I mean, the other...
My favourite aspect of that, though, was the way he sat down in that red chair and he looked as though, ugh, how distasteful it was to sit down in that gaudy, horrible red chair. And he looked down to the red chair to his left and the red chair to his right and sort of sank into this awful, awful red chair.
And he made, as he sank into that awful, awful red chair, he made the story of the game all about him.
Again.
Yeah, I mean, how he would cope with no identified strikers, and whether he would elect Davo to shut the game down as he'd done against United. That's what we expected. But the opening of the game, it was surprisingly frenetic.
Wide open, Rog. Lots of space for both teams. I mean, Arsenal started brighter than Chelsea, but
Chelsea
had their moments too, and both teams were giving each other space on the ball in midfield.
Yeah, I mean, Arsenal were absolutely frenetic in the opening, but it was Chelsea who had the first clear-cut chance.
Yeah, 60th
Oscar
minute.
Played in by a Marsman, whose name we do not know. And then he was levelled. I mean, David Ospina went Cam Chancellor, helmet to helmet with wide receiver coming over the middle with no helmet. It was the kind of vicious hit Arsene Wenger would love to lay on Jose Mourinho in his wildest dreams, I imagine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Chelsea fans first screamed, how was that not a penalty? It was a shocking blow, shocking on the eyes. And then, I mean, we hear a lot about the Premier League's concussion protocol. Even more shocking than it wasn't a penalty, Davo, was Oscar. Frightening scenes of him kind of jerking without any kind of intention or seeming consciousness. But then he was allowed to finish the half until he was pulled off and sent to hospital. Where is this much banded around protocol?
Yeah. I've got the protocol in my hands here, Rog. I mean, there are lots of aspects of it. But one of the things, there's meant to be tunnel doctors. You know, we watch a lot of tunnel, Rog. We thrive in the tunnel. We love tunnel, but we don't see a lot of doctor in tunnel. But the role of the tunnel doctors, that's an independent doctor, not affiliated with either team, who's meant to be there. It's a requirement to help recognise the signs of concussion, Rog. Quite apart from that, every... medical professional in every Premier League team needs to carry the concussion recognition tool. Just seems very, very bizarre. And we're seeing this happen again and again and again. And you made the point this morning, which I think is so well taken, is that the British media do not seem to report on this whatsoever.
It was a non-story. I think Americans have been sensitised to it by the NFL. But in England, it is a dead story. Absolute crickets. The scenes were shocking, but there's been no kind of follow-up on the thing. And I've come to think about it, Davo. Just the English separate the mental and the physical unbelievably. Literally, they have no understanding of the former. They understand broken legs. They understand the flu. But they have no real appreciation.
Only recently we've understood those things, Rog.
Well, Dark Ages just lifted, Dave. Yeah. But, I mean, the notion of psychological damage, the notion of mental injury, England is still very much in the Middle Ages in that regard. I think they respect any medical injury that can be cured by leeches draining blood. That's a real injury.
Yeah.
But it's very, very upsetting. And it was awful to see the bloke on the ground in that fashion, and shocking to see him a minute later running around forced to play on.
Yeah, that was not the only controversial penalty non-call of the first half, Rog. The second one involved Fabregas and Santi Cazorla Fabregas returning to the team, Rog, where he spent 8 years. Really, pretty substantial trailing leg from Santi Cazorla, a tricky piece of footwork by Fabregas, but it seemed to be an over-simulation, Rog,
yep,
that not only cost him not getting a penalty, but cost him a yellow card.
Yeah, Sess doesn't turn the rocket boosters on Gary Cahill style there. It would have been a penalty. But this was all about Chelsea continuing to send different runners at the beginning, Oscar, William, Ramirez. Oddly to me, everybody but Hazard, who didn't really get in the game. Maybe he was doing what you were describing, which was just being a mental decoy. Uh-huh. But Cesc continuously looked to loop diagonal balls over the top.
Well, he had so much space in the middle of the field.
Yeah, I mean, Chelsea, I've got to say, you've already said it, to channel Charlie the Red, they look like 11 best friends. They don't out-passion their opponents, Davo. They out-discipline them. It's an amazing stat to me that Chelsea have kept 5 clean sheets in a row against Arsenal in all competitions, which is absolutely staggering. Another penalty, which we've seen given around the 34th minute, as Ars Blog would say, referee, as Gary Cahill dived in, hands in a natural or unnatural position, depending on whether you're a Chelsea or an Arsenal fan. But after that, it was pretty clear that the referee was, I mean, if a player defenestrated another or feasted on their organs while drinking a glass of Chianti, there was going to be no penalties in this game.
Yeah.
And Arsenal started to become dominant, which was terrifying, I'm guessing, mostly for Arsenal fans, because they know that their team are never more likely to concede when camped in their opponent's penalty area. And I say this, credit to Arsenal, Davo, that they were never caught on the counter in this game. But Chelsea's second half defending, it was fantastic.
Superb. As we talked about it yesterday, Rog, their back seven, Chelsea's back seven, and it really is a back seven, including Courtois and their two holding midfielders. It just is, they just discipline, they press with such pressure. Even their forwards get back and they defend really, really, really well. Drogba came in, as we've said before. He is a central defender in the guise of a striker. He's a...
he's like a closer.
Yeah, he really is a closer. He comes in to go and play central defence on set pieces. And it's that kind of discipline defending, and that is the reason they're going to win the Premier
League.
They
remind me defensively, Davo, at times, of the Texas Horn Lizard.
Yeah.
Which squirts blood out of its eyes at predators.
Yeah.
And at other times, they remind me of the Central African hairy frog, mm-hmm, which breaks its own bones, then uses them to ward off attackers. And I'll say, moving from hairy frogs, John Terry, magnificent. Olivier Giroud is wonderfully handsome, but he barely had a sniff all game. Thierry Henry, in the booth for Sky post-game, said, Giroud does a job, but you can't win the league with him. But John Terry, Davo, absolutely. Second wind.
Well, this is a player, of course, who Rafa Benitez, when he was managing Chelsea, said couldn't play 2 games in a week. This guy, you know, assuming they play him until the end of the season, he may play all 38 Premier League fixtures from the start, Rog. That is a pretty amazing, amazing record for a player of his age.
It's like watching Cocoon meets the Shining. If you can mix Cocoon with The Shining, you get a mix of exactly what it is. It's like a hybrid of those two movies.
And I've said this before, when you go and watch Chelsea live, you are quite stunned always by just watching John Terry marshal his defence, order Gary Cahill, Kurt Zouma, his fellow defenders around the pitch, like they are like sheepdogs out in the middle of a sheepdog trial. One Man and His Dog, the show we used to love when we were younger, Rog.
I was surprised, actually, Wenger left it so late to introduce his subs, throw some speed at Chelsea. I mean, Arsenal had gone past 75 minutes and the spectre of Wenger's worst nightmare, bare-bottom spanking humiliation, had long passed. He ultimately did throw on all his fireworks, but they barely made a dent. And that double whiff at the end, which was so Arsenal-y by Ozil and by Welbeck. I mean, it's impossible to be an Arsenal fan without feeling that kind of degree of pain, known only to those who like to wear rusty nipple clips. I was also disappointed, Dave, that Wenger didn't channel his inner Rob Wright or his Tony Twist and try and change the momentum of the game by just walking up to Mourinho and totally decking him. Hashtag Arsene Wenger enforcer. No noise from the latte boys, screamed the Chelsea end. Boring, boring Chelsea, responded the Arsenal faithful. And how they howled when Cesc came off at 90 minutes.
Yeah, well, they were sort of in an identity crisis.
Yes.
Are they going to boo? Are they going to clap?
They boo.
How do they feel? They boo clapped.
They boo clapped.
They clap booed.
Yeah, I mean, he debuted at Arsenal at age 16. He was captain at 21. For 90 minutes, every touch was booed. He got to experience John Terry's life for just one day. And when he came off, it was proof of that old Pretender song, There's a Thin Line Between Love and Hate. Arsenal fans, they didn't really know whether to remember nostalgically the Champions League final he played in or just boo him for his treachery. And the emotions that came reminded me a little bit of that Drake lyric, jealousy is just love and hate at the same time. The only disappointing thing from a Chelsea perspective, why didn't we get to see what Diego Costa was wearing this week?
Oh, you are so right. I'd have loved that. Because I think he knows the cameras are going to be on him. He probably had an amazing outfit on.
Oh, we'll never know. We'll never know. Instead, we saw something even worse than Diego Costa's dress sense, which was John Terry, his orgasm face,
the
at
death,
the final
the
whistle.
Death yodel, Rog, the death yodel.
If that's what you like to call it.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got to say, it's filled my dreams. Nightmares, they're technically called, for the past two nights, Davey.
Yeah.
You know, when I see his face in that kind
that's
of
him happy.
I've got to say, I just think the Cossacks are coming for my people. That's the face people have pulled for thousands of years before coming to knock down the doors in Eastern Europe. At CS Now Run tweeted at Men in Blazers, congratulations to Chelsea. They found or discovered soccer's hacker shack strategy. I don't think they did, David.
I don't think that's what it was. I don't think that's what it was.
This was as good a performance as you'll ever see in the Premier League from a back four.
Yeah.
And we're getting, I mean, it takes us to that boring debate, which Jose Mourinho again brilliantly tried to say boring. I think boring is 10 years without a title. That's boring.
Yeah.
Oh, he is. I've got to say to you, Davey, he's brilliant. He's like a James Carvillian kind of character who realises he only needs to grab points from certain games. While every manager's trying to win every big game, he knows he only needs to win certain swing states. Chelsea didn't attack aggressively the last couple of games because they didn't need to. They got their goal scoring out of the way earlier in the season.
Yeah, well, they still, only Man City have scored more goals than them in the league this season. A lot of people say, oh yeah, Chelsea got the lead early, and because they got the lead early, nobody's caught up with them, as though the games in the early part of the season didn't count. But look, let's face it, no one has really mounted a serious challenge against them. Chelsea were 13 points ahead in the league in November after beating Arsenal at the beginning of October. They got their lead up to 13 points in November. And let's face it, Arsenal have managed to grab back three of those points since. It's not only at the beginning of the season. They've been good leading from the front. It's a very, very difficult thing to do. I'm not saying they're playing the most beautiful football. They don't play. They are not the best footballing team in the Premier League if what you like to see is attacking football. But there is beauty in that defensive football. There is discipline in it. And there is massive, massive mental strength. And I think it sets a bar for where the teams that want to challenge them next season, the Arsenals, the Man Uniteds, the Manchester Cities, the Liverpools, how good offensively they're going to have to be to break Chelsea down. Chelsea, these other teams don't have any divine right to attack at will. They're going to be closed down. They're going to be made to play much more cleverly, much, much quicker, and they're all going to need brilliant strikers.
And they're boring in the same way Spain were boring with their dominance in 2012 Euros. They're a team playing to their strengths, where their opponents can do nothing about it at all.
Having said that, the asterisk is not only will the the sophisticated European pundits of football will never warm to the way that Chelsea play football, but also, to be fair, and as a Chelsea fan I can say this, Chelsea aren't in the same league as Real Madrid or Barcelona or Bayern Munich. And this season, had Chelsea managed to eke out that result in that very close game against PSG, I think Chelsea would have been in some trouble now with the lack of squad rotation. If Chelsea had to play Barcelona in the middle of those games versus Man United and Arsenal, that would have been, they wouldn't have had 4 points from these
two games.
That
notion of respect, it reminds me of one of my favourite press conference interchanges of the season this weekend, when Jose was asked, is it unfortunate you won't be loved by the neutrals? Is it better to be respected than loved? And can you be respected and loved? What? That's a life question. That's not a football question.
That's a tough question for anyone.
Jose took it on the chin. He said that. And this is, I'm going to read it word for word because it's beautiful. It's brilliant. It's frightening. He says, I have lots of love. I have lots of love. No problem. If you tell the truth, people will fall in love with us. But you have to say the truth. Sometimes you don't. If you say the truth, we will walk in the street and people will throw kisses to
us. They will.
And no problem. Throw kisses. These are the wisest words about love outside of a Howard Jones song, Dave, that I've ever heard. Final score, stylish football 0, trophies 1.
I wonder what Chelsea would have to do in the off-season to end up to be a serious European contender. Because they're playing sort of perfect defensive football at this point. They've got this one of the best young players in the world in Eden Hazard. I wonder what it is that they need
to do. I'm sure that's what everybody at the club is thinking about now. Rog, for me, the game of the weekend, even better than Chelsea-Arsenal, Everton 3, Manchester United 0. Look at the little twinkle in your eyes.
The David Moyes Memorial Derby.
Everton thump a listless United at Goodison behind goals from James McCarthy, John Stones, and Kevin Morales. A victory so decisive, it left Louis van Gaal both gracious and lucid. What happened in his post-match press comments?
Oh, Seabiscuit.
Yeah.
Cool Runnings.
Yeah.
Everton Football Club.
Oh, yeah.
Disney will release an animated movie
called
about
Everton.
This game, David.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
I think somebody already made the Smurfs, Rog. How did you feel before kickoff? How did you feel at halftime? How did you feel at the end, Rog? These are my three burning questions.
I'll tell you how I feel now, okay. And then we'll go
Let's start
through.
Back. We're going to go in reverse
in
order.
From older Rog back to younger. The younger Rog of Sunday we'll move back to. But right now, we're going to Benjamin Button it.
Yeah.
I've got mixed emotions about it, David.
Okay.
Complicated.
Okay.
I mean, at the time, I felt like Anthony Michael Hall in Weird Science, a bit like that when Kelly LeBrock suddenly just popped up out of nowhere. God. Unexpected. But honestly,
it's the only time I've liked the colour red.
This Everton season, it's been such a catastrophic letdown. Such a ignorant march of folly. I've become numb to their results and their performances just naturally over the course of the campaign. So this massive win in garbage time, it was strangely unsatisfying in the couple of days afterwards. It's not as deliciously Caligula-esque as I would have thought it would be. I can tell you at kickoff then, I was terrified, full of doom, full of fear. I mean, we're past 40 points now, so we're not going to get relegated. So I can watch Everton for the first time in weeks.
Uh-huh.
And I did. I tuned in, filled with doom. I couldn't see any positives, no shining light. I was braced to witness two of our own, Marouan Fellaini and Wayne Rooney, be our own executioners on our own field. Two former heroes of mine. I wrote my book, this is as close as I will get to knowing how a polygamist feels when he runs into two of his ex-wives with another husband.
Yeah.
I mean, I know a lot of our listeners will have that feeling.
I thought you were going to say practice polygamy, and I was thinking, we've never heard from them.
Yeah, well, that's in our other podcast. But we scored too soon, David.
No, you didn't. It wasn't too soon. It was a fantastic goal. Yeah. And the most remarkable thing, 5 minutes? It was an Everton counter-attack, Rog.
An Everton counter-attack.
It's like a 2000 Bordeaux.
Oh, it was as thrilling to watch unfold as that scene in Dumbo when the elephant jumps off a cliff and learns he can fly.
Yeah.
McCarthy stumbled in Ballon d'Or style. Take that, Gloria. And Van Gaal, the camera cut to him. He was utterly gobsmacked. Turning around to Ryan Giggs, wondering, what is it that the bloofs or the boobs or the Goodison Park raisins or whatever he charmingly believes
were called? The blueberries.
I mean, we were doing, Dave, our game plan was to do to United what Chelsea had done to United.
Yeah.
And that filled me with fear.
Well, yeah.
Because Everton are to Chelsea what Sanyo is to Sony.
Mm-hmm.
It's like similar looking on the outside, but with inferior, cheap, corroding components. On the inside, you have Zuma.
Uh-huh.
We have Gareth Barry. And I was terrified that if we try to park the bus for 85 minutes, our bus has no wheels, is corroded by rust, and has had its engine ripped out.
Yeah.
But our only hope, I realised quickly, as Fellaini blasted a shot over the bar, United attacked as if their players were all wearing Falcao's cologne.
I know, it's odd. A very, very odd and unsyncopated Manchester United performance, Rog. Some of it, I think, can be explained by having to play on Everton's plaid field, which is quite difficult to play on plaid.
Oh, it's a spring pattern, David.
Yeah.
Embrace it. I say it's funny watching Marouan Fellaini. This is his first time back to Goodison Park. I realised, I wrote in my little book, how I used to love those fouls.
Yeah.
Those persistent fouls. And the second goal, David, John Stones.
Oh. What a player. John Stones is really turning into one of my favourite young players in England, Rog. Saw him play amazingly for the under-21s a few weeks ago as well. And he scores a goal that you just don't understand why you don't see more goals scored like this. The near-post run from the corner, catches his defender as he turns around, actually beats Fellaini, Rog, and nods it in, glances it off the left-hand side of his forehead. Just into the crossbar and into the net.
When that went in, I laughed louder than when Ashley Young caught the bird poo in his mouth earlier in the season. And I noted in my book, Davo, John Stones is the kind of man I dreamed of being as a child and failed miserably at being He's a nobleman of action and valorous deeds, that's what I imagine.
Can Everton hold on to him, Rog?
Definitely not. Oh. Hope we get a lot of money from him, from Chelsea or City. Yeah. No, I mean, Roberto Martinez loves him and says that he's going to be England's central defender in tournaments for the next decade.
Yeah, fantastic.
And we're beginning to see why that is the case. I mean, the odd part of this game is, David, one of these teams was battling for a Champions League place.
Yeah.
The other had nothing to play for whatsoever. And you couldn't tell which was which.
Yeah.
United were pedestrian, almost arrogant. And Everton, David, they played like it was the Battle of Endor. It sat deeper and deeper. James McCarthy was a dire wolf. And thank God for Timothy Matthew Howard.
Oh, Timony Howard. I thought his middle name was Timony, Rog. Oh,
he was on Belgian hating form. He was phenomenal. He's been under a lot of scrutiny, bordering on abuse from Everton fans this season. He had a golden day for the ages. A third came from all the loopholes in the offside rule.
And some very match-fixy defending from Paddy McNair, Rog.
Oh, and that was it, Dave. Wow, Ryan Giggs is going to get it when they get
home. Oh, he's going to get it so badly.
I spent the rest of the afternoon writing ballads about this game.
Yeah.
On my lyre. I loved it. Not as much as I imagined David Moyes would have loved it.
Yeah.
But hearing the Everton fans at the end singing Rooney, what's the score? 3-0 to Everton. My wife thought it was a sign the apocalypse is upon us.
Yeah.
I think she's got that mixed up with earthquakes, plagues, famine, skies darkening, oceans full of blood and Tracy Chapman's agent returning our calls. And the question is, Dave, why now? Why now for Everton? Why not back earlier in the season? Why are they turning it on when nothing matters?
Well, it is easier to play great football when the pressure's off, but that doesn't explain how they managed to stop Man United playing football and why Man United played so badly. You're right, there was still something in it for Manchester United. And I think the most remarkable thing about this game is that the narrative building over the past few weeks has been, oh, Man United, they're ready for their title challenge next season. This has to poke a massive hole in the validity of that narrative. Still a lot of questions about this team.
One of the most flip-flopping narratives of the season. Yes, there was no Carrick, but this was not solely a Carrick was missing performance. And I say about Everton, when I sat down with Roberto Martinez in February, he says he trains his squad to peak in the last quarter of the season. And I guess Everton...
He might want to rethink that strategy.
I mean, Everton's 6-game unbeaten run. Yeah. But that run also coincides with us being booted out of the Europa League. That poison chalice that turns hot, contending, aspiring teams into puddles. Think Southampton this season. Be careful, Southampton. And I wonder how much of Van Gaal's success this season was because his team, like you hinted earlier about European play, didn't qualify even for the Europa last season. How much of Liverpool's last season was because they had no European play at all the year before that? The Europa League is arsenic for the ambitions of any aspiring team.
Yeah.
At Matt Frapp said, this game, in the words of Ray Hudson, was not just a dream, it was a wet dream of orgasmic proportion.
Certainly was, Rog. I'm glad Everton got the big win. The other team in Manchester, Rog, Manchester City 3, Aston Villa 2. This was a cracking game of football. After going up 2-0, City capitulate, concede 2 goals to 4-4 Tim Sherwood's side. But an 89th minute Fernandinho winner sends City back into second place ahead of Arsenal and United. Broke poor Tim Sherwood's heart. Villa, meanwhile, remain only 2 points clear of the drop zone. This team are too good. You heard it here, Rog. They are too good to go down.
Who, Man City?
Yeah. No, Villa.
Oh, the joy Tim Sherwood experienced last weekend in that FA Cup semi-final. We watched it, Davo. Turn to ashes in his mouth. His team had the worst televised hangover since Long Duk Dong passed out on the lawn in 16 candles. And it makes me sad to say it was Brad Guzan at the centre of it. Inside 3 minutes, that first time left foot pass, Davo.
Oh, an own assist.
It was an own goal. It was a through. I like to think of it as a great through ball that split the defence.
Yeah.
I like to think Jurgen Klinsmann watched Brad Guzan and made a note. I may have found the creative midfielder.
Maybe playing on the left wing.
Good Guzzi.
Guzzi.
Good Guzzi. Oh, he made it easy for Kun Aguero, who couldn't help but giggle.
Oh, no, smiling. They were all giggling.
That Casey Keller, he's a madman.
Yeah.
I asked Guzan when I was
Sherwood yelled at Friedel after the game.
When I made the documentary, what goes through his mind after making a mistake? He said to me, it hurts. You know, the fans are mad at you, your teammates are mad at you, and you have to focus immediately on big saves you've made in the past and positive ideas to reinforce your own confidence to get you through that game so that you can just beat yourself up after the final whistle. It wasn't the only defensive howler of the game. I mean, Villa played this chaotic high line, lazy marking, and the second one was courtesy of one of the worst wall constructions of the season. I think it was Richardson who was standing off and Kolarov struck through the gap from 25 yards. It was your man, Tom Cleverley.
Yeah.
Forced him back into the game. Jack Grealish running around.
Yeah, socks around his ankles.
Oh, running around Frank Lampard. It was like watching a teen at the peak of his powers run at father time. And briefly, Villa started to knock the ball around as if they were Pep Guardiola's Barcelona. Carlos Sanchez with a joyous goal.
Yeah.
Before City nicked it, Fernandinho, 89th minute. Again, the Brazilian had all the time in the world to bring down the ball and smash it past poor, gorgeous American Brad Guzan.
Yeah, Manchester City moved back into second place, Rog.
Remember them?
Yeah. West Brom, 0. Liverpool, 0. Remember Liverpool, Rog. The Brodge trots out an 11 that includes both Steven Gerrard and Mario Balotelli. Liverpool failed to get a win that would have moved them to within 5 points of United. As we record this pod, they are in action against Hull. Rog, we do not know the outcome or even the latest score of that game.
Yeah, I mean, a relatively meaningless Liverpool game. Brendan Rodgers' team have suddenly become to the Premier League what Tidal is to popular music. Well done, Stevie Gerrard, 12th player to hit 500 appearances for Liverpool. He then went and unfurled a performance that will make many Liverpool fans hope that that's his last. I've got to say, the story of Liverpool's season is they have no consistent goal scorer. Sturridge, Mario Balotelli, Ricky Lambert, Fabio Barini. They've produced 8 league goals in total, and their game plan right now seems to be get the ball to Coutinho
and or Hendo.
Hope he can do some of that magic-y stuff that he does.
Yeah, pretty much magic-y stuff. Yeah, do you think that's the sort of thing Brodge would write up on a board? Magic-y stuff.
Trademark, Brodge. Yeah. I say, by the way, Daniel Sturridge is sad to me that he's taken himself out of that number one position through repeated injury. He's only played in 18 of Liverpool's 52 games this season.
Yeah. Southampton 2, Tottenham 2, Rog. Spurs come back from behind twice to earn a draw at St. Mary's and remain 1 point above Ronald Koeman's men in sixth place. Could be important, Rog, because the number of Europa League places will depend on Arsenal winning the FA Cup. If Arsenal win the FA Cup, you assume that Tottenham and Southampton will both make the Europa League.
Yeah, if you're a Southampton fan, you hope that they don't.
Yeah.
If you're a sensible Southampton fan. I'll say this was less a football game, more a hair battle spectacular.
Yeah.
So many amazing styles.
Love that show.
Lamela, Chadley of Spurs going up against Southampton with their greaseback shaves, Pelé, Font, verging on the Devo homage, Ronald Koeman's side. At Katie Belmore asks, a tough question of the morning. Is Chadley sporting a man bun or is it just a tiny ponytail?
Yeah, I know. It's a very good question.
I think technically it's a pig in a blankie. Yeah. We should say Harry Kane, congratulations. Third Spurs player in 4 years to win the PFA Young Player of the Year. Eden Hazard.
Was the PFA Player of the Year.
Yeah. I said afterwards, people respect the way I've done it, said Harry Kane. I've not just been thrown in. I've had to work hard. He was asked what was different about this season, and he said simply, I got to play.
Yeah, that was the major difference, without a doubt. Very bright future for Harry Kane. I still believe in the Premier League and his force field of space that he seems to run around with the entire time. Burnley, 0. Leicester, 1. Rog, a brutal 59 seconds for Burnley fans in this scrap to stave off relegation. Less than 1 minute after Maddie Taylor's 59th minute penalty clanked off the outside of the post, having sent Schmeichel the wrong way. Leicester was celebrating a scrappy Jamie Vardy goal. Nigel Pearson's men win their fourth straight, amazing, to go 1 point clear of the relegation zone. Dave Fishwick's Burnley, meanwhile, Sean Dyche might have a problem with that, now 5 points from safety.
They're waxing and waning.
Yeah.
This is less a football game too. It's more a series of terribly taken free kicks. It was hard to watch, not just because the football was dire, but because one of these teams we know, who we love, is going to be flung through the Premier League's moon door of relegation. And here Burnley were Lady Lisa Aaron's champion, Sir Vardis Aegean. Leicester were very, very, very Bron, about to make the bad man fly. The game, Dave, the cruelest 60 seconds in Burnley's history, or at least since Chumbawamba broke up. Deitch's team had not scored in 449 minutes. And 57 minutes in, Schmeichel made an amazing save.
Yeah.
Followed by a trip. in the area. The fans could hardly look. Deitch couldn't look, Davo. Matty Taylor took the ball on the longest run-up.
Oh, it was so long.
And instantly turned into Kappa's fall-in soldier. Deitch on the sideline with his fingers in the air as if he wanted to disembowel Taylor immediately with his own fingers. And it would get worse. They were caught with a haymaker thrown at their own chin with their own fist. And down went Leicester. Somehow Duff got caught up. The ball bobbled over the line. And that's it, David.
Vardy poked it home, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to say, there was a Ernest Dimnen, a French priest and philosopher. There was a quote of his in Media Redef. He said, "The happiness of most people is not ruined by great catastrophes or fatal errors, but by the repetition of slowly destructive little things." There are a lot of slowly destructive little things for Burnley. Who would you prefer to be, or who do you feel feels worse, Davo? Matty Taylor or Duff?
I think Matty Taylor feels worse. With 449 minutes without a goal, he wanted to put that in. Having earned the penalty himself as well, Rog.
Nigel Pearson is Harry Houdini winning again. I've got to tell you, I wonder if he prefers it when his team loses and he can tell people to piss off. Great interview with him in The Guardian. He says, "I have to accept what I am rather than necessarily change for the sake of it. That's not to say I don't believe in finding ways to improve, because if I thought this was as far as I can go, I may as well just get in my car, go home and start deadheading the daffodils."
Yeah.
We've all been there.
Yeah, certainly have. Burnley's loss made even worse by a win for Hull City at Crystal Palace. Rog, the patron saint of pie, Steve Bruce, marches into Selhurst Park. Not an easy thing to do, Rog. And claims all 3 points behind two goals from Senegalese striker Damien Doi.
Again, another game. Tiny margins made massive differences. Hull's first goal appeared to involve a handball. The listless Palace also had a Yaya Sanogo goal scratched off. But Ndoye, the Senegalese striker who got the double, he came on the transfer window deadline, Dave. His goals have been key. Steve Bruce will only vaguely say he costs, quote, a couple of million. And if Hull stay up, it'll be a couple of million well spent. Steve Bruce, huge mountains ahead still for Hull. They're playing Liverpool right now, Arsenal, Burnley, Spurs and United before they end the season. But to see him so jolly on the sideline makes my heart feel good. I don't know if you saw in London, there was a stinking 11-ton megalith of congealed fat that was pulled out of the London sewer. They've called it a fatberg because it's the size of an iceberg, says the English papers, but made of, quote, congealed fat caked with compacted wet wipes that have been flushed down London drains. And when I saw the video of it, it looked just like Steve Bruce.
Oh.
Fatberg.
Poor Steve Bruce. Poor Fatberg. Newcastle 2, Swansea 3. Rog, that's another team very much in the relegation battle now. Newcastle, they lose their seventh straight, Rog. Seven games in a row they've lost. They continue to free fall down the table. That's what happens when you lose seven straight, Rog. It's the Magpies' worst top flight run in 38 years. Once a certainty for safety, they are now just 5 points clear of relegation. This was a topsy-turvy game, though.
Things go from bad to worse to darker than it's possible to fathom at Newcastle. Jack Cork's winner for Swansea. He charged from one end to the other without any Newcastle player appearing eager to tackle him nor take him out. I mean, the team's worse than meek. They seem to not care at all. And I feel sorry for Newcastle's temporary manager, John Carver. He's a local man who adores the club and is now taking incredible abuse from the fans of the club that he loves so much. His team face a massive game against resurgent Leicester this weekend. Quick note on Swansea. Gary Monk's team earned their best points tally in the Premier League, beating the mark by Brendan Rodgers in 2011. As you say in Welsh, long faiki daw.
Yeah, they've still got an outside
Welsh
chance.
For Mazel Tov,
they still have an outside chance of making Europa League, Rog, but you would
don't
say that
do it, lads. I don't know how you say don't do it, lads, in Welsh.
Yeah. Stoke 1, Sunderland 1. I don't like games involving too many red and white stripes, Rog. Connor Wickham's first-minute goal was cancelled out by another Charlie Adam wonder strike. Where does
games.
He get them? Despite earning a point, the Black Cats fall into the bottom three, a point behind Leicester and Hull City, Rog. Oh,
Charlie Adam doesn't like just strike the ball. He obliterates it. He's a guilty pleasure as a footballer.
Yeah.
He's like eating an amazing cheeseburger.
It's like in golf. You describe people as golfers as ball strikers. They just have great... They have that descending blow contact. Justin Rose, a great ball striker. Charlie Adam is a ball striker.
He is.
That shot this week... I mean, it's the right foot that moves away
not hit as a banana kick, hit and just so central in the boot, no spin, just moves away. Love it.
And it was against Sunderland, the team who have spent the week besieged by anti-rape campaigners over their decision not to suspend Adam Johnson, who has now been charged for sexual misconduct. I've got to say, it takes a special...
Yeah, with a minor.
It takes a special team to have fans who fly a plane with a banner over Newcastle, mocking their regional rivals whilst their own barn is burning.
Talking about burning barns, QPR 0, West Ham 0. The Raisins had the best chance as Jane Austen's brother Charlie saw his first half penalty saved by Adrian. QPR in 19th place, 4 points from safety, Rog.
Yeah, I mean, Sam Allardyce's team were crap. West Ham tried to give QPR the 3 points. James Collins made his contractually bound cock-up of the week to give away the penalty. Adrian has saved three penalties on the bounce now. This one from a broken-hearted Charlie Austin. I remember when he was good. We're on top of the league, chanted the West Ham fans. They're talking about the Fair Play League. They've had the least bookings. It means they may be. I don't know why they're cheering. On the way to the Europa. At Sporting Intel, a fabulous follow on Twitter tweeted, QPR have won 0.11 points per game versus fellow London teams and 1.4 points per game versus others outside of London. If they'd done that against all their opponents, 1.4, they'd be 6 points safe. The other side, Dave, of being a London team, all of these incredibly hard London derbies. They now have to go to Liverpool and Manchester City in search of points they probably will not get. There's 4 weeks of oxygen remaining for these teams in the relegation race. I've got to say, the player I've loved watching in the relegation battle, thriving, Esteban Cambiaso.
Yeah.
God, I love watching him for Leicester.
It's like he's now just in the mood. He's now he needed this to get interested.
He is in the dogfight, and he's loving it. Yeah. When I was at Leicester 3 weeks ago, they all talk about what a leader he is in the locker room. He's thriving amongst the chaos. I spent the weekend inspired by Cambiaso to make a best bald 11 on FIFA Ultimate Team. Many of you did as well. There's still time to send in your elite, bald FIFA Ultimate Team. Send them to us via Twitter. We're going to announce the winner who will get a Men in Blazers patch in Thursday's newsletter. I will say one of my favourites is by @MacDKeanu, who sent in 11, which was Brad Guzan in goal behind 10 John Joe Shelvies.
Very, very good. Shame Frank LaBeouf isn't still playing, Rog. Well, look, we talked about the relegation race. Let's turn our attention to the championship. That championship.
Always
Rog.
Looking at the good side, David.
Well, the Premier League party remains at capacity for the time being. We do know two teams who are going to be joining the Premier League next year, Rog. Watford clinched promotion Saturday after a 2-0 win at Brighton. And Monday night, Bournemouth, the Cherries, saw off Bolton 3-0 to all but guarantee their spot in the Premier League.
What do you need to know? They're both teams, David. Yeah. Most important thing, probably, both instantly $183 million richer by coming up to the Premier League. Yeah. What do we know of Bournemouth, David? We should say, as a city, it passes in England. I think of it as like as close as we get to a beach town.
Yeah, it's down on the south coast, Rog.
It means it's on a body of water which is not chemically infested with dead sheep bobbing up and down. A lot of old people retire to Bournemouth.
Yeah.
Tolkien died there. Shelley's buried there. Robert Louis Stevenson wrote The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yeah.
Well, living there. I mean, we talked last week of how they survived bankruptcy, the tiny stadium, 11,700, which I'm sure they're already doing huge makeovers on to prepare for Premier League life. Eddie Howe, 37-year-old wonder manager, former Bournemouth player turned coach. And just what the Premier League needs, Dave, another mysterious Russian oligarch owner.
Yeah.
This one has got a great name. Maxim Denim. Is that a real person?
Denim.
Maxim Denim. Every time he's ever written about in an article, they call him the mysterious Maxim Denim, which is he's probably going to be one of the great characters of next season. Watford, Dave, slightly less romantic.
Well, Bournemouth have never been in the Premier League, Rog. Watford have been in the Premier League. Used to be owned by Elton John. Watford coming up, Rog. They play in ugly uniforms, which is my biggest problem with them.
The Hornets.
Red shorts, yellow tops, and they're sort of tomato red shorts as well.
How
I just don't like the
colours. How would you describe Watford? It's like an innocuous northern suburb of London.
I've never been to Watford, Rog, because it's north of London.
Oh.
It's sort of north London. A lot of people say that the north starts once you go past Watford. I regard it as before you get to Watford.
Well, the best way of describing it is that Simon Le Bon of Duran Duran, Ginger Spice and Jack Collison were all born there.
Yeah.
They were last in the Premier League 8 years ago. They've had financial struggles and then they were taken over by the Pozzo family.
Yeah.
Sounds like the kind of family that make offers that you...
You can't turn down.
Yeah, they also own Udinese in Italy, Granada in Spain. They kind of bounce players between the three clubs. And I'd say how they do next season will be determined by how much of a priority they are for their owners and how much they're invested in the off-season, because they need to strengthen very badly, as we've seen with Burnley this season. There were great scenes, it should be said, of their players on the coach. They learned they were promoted because other results went their way, and someone videoed the second they found out they were going to be in the Prem. Well, not necessarily them, David.
I know, that's the problem with it, is that they were excited that Watford had gone to the Premier League. It might just be occurring to some of them that they'll be nowhere near the Premier League.
Yeah, their joy is poetic and moving, and then you start wondering exactly how many of them will still be part of Watford's Premier League squad come kick-off. We will see.
Watford and Bournemouth have claimed the top two spots in the Championship, Rog. Four more teams are going to participate in a playoff for the final promotion spot. The semi-finals are two legs, with the winners meeting in a single final.
The richest game in football.
These are fantastic games, Rog. Middlesbrough and Norwich have already clinched playoff spots for Ipswich, producer JW's beloved Ipswich.
By the way, this gentleman is so cool. His team are on the brink of 180 whatever million dollars bonanza, and you wouldn't know it. Can we give you, out of 10, how many would you say is their chance of making it in your mind?
8 out of 10.
Confidence.
And they might play against Norwich in the playoffs, which would be an East Anglian rivalry, Rog. It's like the Bloods and the Crips in East Anglia.
It'd be like John Deere fighting the maker of that Cub ride on that they advertised during ice hockey games.
Yeah, so Ipswich, Derby County, Brentford, Rog. Love Brentford. And Wolves. It's going to come down to this Saturday, the final day of the Championship season.
Come on, Ipswich.
Big week ahead for an MLS side and Montreal Impact, Rog. Wednesday night, they host Mexico's Club America in the second leg of the CONCACAF Champions League final. The Impact and Impact earned a 1-1 draw in the first leg last week at Estadio Azteca.
What a 1-1 draw. They gutted it out. And they'll now cling on to that away goal advantage before a sold-out crowd, some have said, will be 61,000-plus.
Yep.
One of the worst teams in MLS may strike one of the most important victories for the league by ridding it of the monkey off its back of never having won the regional CONCACAF Champions League tournament. Hence, slight MLS transfer magic with the team able to import a new goalkeeper to replace their starter, Evan Bush, who got a yellow card and who is suspended for the second leg. A win will make Impact players like Nigel Riococca, David. Do you remember him?
Yeah, very well.
He'll be Montreal royalty.
Wow.
Up there with Mordechai Richler, Leonard Cohen and A-Trap. We wish them well, our French friends. Courage.
Yeah, courage. Magic-y stuff, Rog, on the goalkeeper front. The game is tomorrow, Wednesday, April 29th, 8 p.m. ET on Fox Sports 2.
Does Rob Stone turn up for Fox Sports?
I don't know.
Come on, Rob. Cheer them on to victory.
Ronaldo will be there.
Talking about Fox.
Yep.
This week, Alex Morgan and Abby Wombat were on American Idol.
Oh, I love that.
They told Ryan Seacrest.
What did they sing?
They didn't. They just came on and told Ryan Seacrest he could be the water boy for the team.
Oh.
He didn't quite know how to take that.
Yeah.
They presented him with the new US jersey Nike have created, which is an homage to the New Zealand national team.
Yeah.
It's black and white.
Yeah.
With these really odd kind of marker yellow socks.
Yeah.
Leeds United once changed their strip to all white to try and channel the power of Real Madrid.
Yeah.
But camouflaging the powerful US team as one of the top five sides in the Oceania region. I'm starting to think Nike, it's a craven trick in their perverted attempt to do all they can to shame our national team by cloaking them perpetually in clown pajamas.
Yeah, Embassy Row's own Katie Nolan, Rog. She described it as a template for the New Jersey. She had no idea that it was actually the real thing. She just thought it was the template. Talking about the US team, Rog, our guest this week, one of our top five or six favourite Stanford University sophomores, Rog, you got to speak with Jordan Morris.
Our guest today is the first college student to play for the US men's national team since Chris Albright did way back in 1999. Earlier this month, in his first start for Jurgen Klinsmann's team, against our arch-enemy, Mexico, in front of a sold-out Alamo Dome, this man lashed home the game winner, solidifying his spot as a Von Trapp's big man on campus. Now, if only the 20-year-old Stanford sophomore could decide on a major. Ladies and gentlemen, we welcome to the pod hailing from the football mad city of Seattle, live from Stanford. Stanford Messi, Mr. Jordan Morris.
Hey guys, thank you so much for having me.
We are elated, like the rest of the US men's national team fan base. We are absolutely blown away by your meteoric rise. The siege of your US career, Jordan, they're rooted in the scrimmages, right, that Stanford had against the US in the run-up to the 2014 World Cup.
Yeah, exactly. You know, luckily enough, they were able to come here and train before the World Cup, and we were lucky enough to scrimmage against them.
I edited those games. We shot them for the ESPN documentary that we made behind the scenes. I've got to say, you guys, Stanford guys, you did step up. It was hard to tell the difference between your team and the US team, which was still coming together and really quite formative at the time. Can you tell me, what did it feel like from your perspective? Did you feel like you were auditioning for something great, or did you guys just feel like you were kind of cannon fodder in a war movie?
Yeah, no, I think we kind of thought that they were just, you know, playing against us to get some games and some minutes in for the players, which is definitely what they were doing. But we were all so excited to be able to take part in a game like that, because it's definitely a once in a lifetime experience for a lot of those players, and so it was super exciting, and we were definitely all fired up for it. I think, you know, they were doing 3-a-days for 3 weeks, so I don't know how excited those guys were to play us, but we. You know, it was a game of our lives, so we were all very excited, and we played very well, which was awesome to see.
And right then and there, did Jurgen pull you aside? Did any of the US coaches take you aside and say, Jordan Morris, that is some pace you've got, lad?
There were a few comments, but nothing too special after the game. But then, yeah, a couple months later, I had my meeting with Jurgen.
How did he first call you up for the actual squad? Did he do it by phone? Does he do it by email? Does he do it by helicopter?
Yeah, he actually, I mean, usually they do it by email, but the first call-up he met with, he called my dad, and my dad came down to Stanford, and we met at the Four Seasons around here, and we had more of a personal meeting, and he called me up at the end of that meeting.
You ended up joining a squad that was packed with hardened internationals, Alejandro Bedoya, Josie, aspiring hopefuls like Joe Zhao, Breck Shea. What was the welcome like for you from the players, Jordan?
You know, it was super cool to see. They were all very, very supportive, and, you know, even though I was a young guy, they were all, you know, they had my back, and I think they want to see you do well. So that was awesome to see, and, I mean, there were some rookie kind of, had to do some stuff at dinner. I had to stand up and sing in front of the whole team. But other than that, it was all good.
What song was it? Was it a bit of Tracy Chapman? Bit of One Direction? Was it the Stanford fight song?
No, it was Ain't No Mountain High. The one from...
Remember the Titans.
Remember the Titans. Yeah, the one from Remember the Titans.
Who chose Remember the Titans? Was that
We got to choose the song, actually. I was just so nervous. It was like the only one I could think of, and the only one I thought I'd remember the lyrics to. So I got up there and sang that one.
We know you've got a beautiful voice. We also know your pace of your foot. But how big a difference was there in terms of the training between Stanford and the U.S. men's national team? Was it the physical difference, the tactical difference, or the mental difference that was the biggest?
I think it was all a combination of all three of those. I think it was definitely a big jump. And what I noticed after training was I was physically tired, but I was mentally tired too, because you have to think so much and think so quickly because the speed of play is so high. So I think definitely physically it's very demanding. You're always working and running really hard, especially as, you know, the young guy out there trying to impress. But it's also very mentally straining to think so quickly and kind of have to think on your feet, because, you know, the ball moves so quickly at the next level.
And when you go to bed at camp, Jordan, were you kind of pinching yourself, or did you take the attitude that, you know what, I've been called up, I belong, this is no big deal?
Definitely the first one. I was pinching myself for sure. I remember I got in the shower and I just, you know, sat in there for 10-15 minutes and couldn't really believe that I was here, because it was something that I dreamed about since I was a little kid. And so the first camp, you know, definitely pinching myself. And as it's gone along a little bit, I feel like I've gotten a little better with that attitude, kind of just trying to take the attitude that I'm here and might as well make the most of it and work really hard. But the first camp, I was definitely pinching myself a little bit.
Well, you're a veteran now, come the Mexico game, a regular in the squad. But how long before kickoff did you know you were going to start the game, and how did you find out?
So I actually knew that the day before at training, Jossie and I were off to the side passing before training started, and Jurgen walked over to us and he said we're going to be scrimmaging a little bit later, so I want you two to form a partnership because you guys are going to be starting tomorrow. And when he said that, my heart just dropped, and I kind of took a look around the stadium and realized how big it was and realized there's going to be a packed crowd tomorrow. I definitely got a little nervous, but so excited.
The great Arsenal player, David O'Leary, I remember reading about his debut for the Republic of Ireland, which he made when he was just 18, where still a real rookie as a footballer. And he said after the game, he said he didn't remember too much about the manager's pre-game speech because he was so nervous he spent most of the time in the toilet, he told the BBC back in the day. How did you feel in the run-up to kickoff? Because during that national anthem, I've got to be honest, you looked like the nerves were kicking in big time.
Yeah, that's what everyone was saying, and you know, for sure, I was really nervous when, you know, I, like I said, it was kind of surprising. Throughout the day, I wasn't too nervous, kind of just doing the regular thing, and then when we got on the bus and got to the stadium, I for sure, the nerves definitely kicked in, and I walked out on the field, and I'd never heard a noise so loud before when you hear all the fans cheering, so that was definitely amped up the nerves a little bit. And then when we were, you know, going through the warm-up, I thought everything was going well, and then we started doing the finishing work right in front of the big American Outlaws section, and I just shanked every single shot I took. I think I took four or five and just hit them all terribly, you know, off to the side or slowly right at the goalie, and I was like, geez, this is not looking good at all. And so Jurgen called me off to the side, and he was like, you know, I can tell you're pretty nervous, but you just got to calm down. And he kind of gave me the advice that once you get your first few touches in, it'll just seem like any other game. And I think that's what happened, is definitely when the national anthem was happening, I was very nervous. But once I got my first few touches and kind of ran myself into the game a little bit, you know, the nerves kind of settled down, and I felt like I could play a little bit more.
Did any of the players give you pertinent advice in particular, Jordan?
You know, not too much about, like, the nerves or anything like that, but I think Bradley was very, very beneficial, and just kind of when we were on the field, kind of on the field stuff, he was very helpful in telling me kind of when to press, when to drop back, you know, things like that. If I had any questions, I went to him. So I think he was very helpful, you know, with all the on the field stuff.
Let's talk about the goal. What emotions did you feel? Did you feel a real sense of vindication in your selection?
I can't really remember what I felt like afterwards or what I was thinking. I mean, it was obviously such an emotional time, and I was so excited. And I think right afterwards, I knew my family was watching at home and my friends were watching at school, and I was like, I wonder what they're, you know, thinking right now. But after that, it kind of all goes blank, and I can't really remember exactly what I was thinking. But, you know, just so excited and such an amazing feeling because, you know, that's that part right there, that's like being able to celebrate like that from all those people is, like I said before, something I've, you know, dreamed about since I was a little kid. So it was an unbelievable moment.
You're only 20, but you've already lived out my childhood dream, Jordan, which is scoring for the U.S. men's national team. But even bigger than that, you did an interview with Julie Stewart Binks post-game, and then, of course, the media buzz in the wake. How long did it take you to come down after the final whistle?
It took a little while for sure. I definitely, you know, didn't get any sleep that night, and it took a little while. And honestly, right now, I still can't really believe what happened this last week. It's been such an honor and such a dream come true. So it's still kind of hitting me a little bit, but it definitely took me a couple days to come down fully.
There's a thing called a bar mitzvah haiku, which is, today I am a man, tomorrow I will return to the seventh grade. How did it feel to go from the high of scoring for the U.S. men's national team against Herrera's Mexico for a Dos Acero game to being back in classes at Stanford?
Yeah, you know, it was definitely a transition a little bit, because coming off such a high, you know, you just kind of go back into normal life. But that's what I love about being here at Stanford, is that, you know, obviously that was a very cool and special moment, but so many people here have done such amazing things, either while they're at Stanford or to get to Stanford. And so when you get back on campus, it's not like everyone's kind of all over you and asking all these questions. It's very, you know, kind of normal that people do all this cool stuff. And that's what I love about it here, is just the people that you meet. Everyone has such a cool story.
I mean, we love Andrew Luck on this show. We run an Andrew Luck book club, so we know, we have a sense of how special the Stanford populace is. How has what has happened to you over the last month, how's that changed the way you think about your own future?
I think it's very, very exciting, because I have, you know, since I've been younger and now especially, I have a lot of goals with the national team. You know, I hopefully want to play in the Olympics, and one day the ultimate goal would be to play in a World Cup. And so I think that, you know, scoring that goal against Mexico kind of gives me confidence, really, that those goals could potentially be reached if I continue to keep my head down and work really hard and continue to grow as a player. So I think overall it's just kind of the confidence factor that if you keep working hard, you know, your goals can be accomplished.
I'm going to ask you the question that everyone in football is going to ask you. So get ready for this.
Okay.
You're currently, Jordan, a sophomore at Stanford. You're an undeclared major. What will the Morris major be?
Right now I'm leaning towards a major called STS. It stands for Science, Technology, and Society. And there's no undergraduate business degree here at Stanford, but it's kind of the closest you can get to that. And so that's currently what I'm leaning towards.
Philosophy. That would be my advice, which you were asking for. Let's finish, Jordan, by talking about the future. We know Jurgen. He likes every national team. Well, Jurgen seems to like national team players whose names begin with a J. He just loves shouting that out. Josie!
Yeah.
Julian! Jordan! So that augurs well. But we know he likes every national team player to push himself to the next level. What is the next level for you as you think about it? Are you going to finish Stanford? Are you going to jump into MLS? Are you just going to go right to Real Madrid?
You know, as of right now, just, you know, really trying to focus on my time here and work hard while I'm here, both on and off the field. And you know, as of right now, the plan is to finish out next season and then kind of see where it goes from there. But most likely end up, you know, going to Seattle, and it's my hometown club, and just great to go back and live with my family and be around them. And I'm definitely more of a homebody type of kid, so. It'd be harder to go over to Europe, but definitely not completely ruling that out if options open up there too, for sure.
How does it work for someone like you? Do you get feelers from European clubs all the time?
No, not really. I think that it's more of, you know, I have some connections now with Andy and Jurgen, and they could potentially set some stuff up over there if that's kind of the path that I want to take.
You're a man with many options. You are fast of feet. It's clear from our time together that you're also sharp of mind, which always augurs well. We cannot wait, and I know I'm speaking for so many of our listeners as I say this, we cannot thank you enough for the joy that you've already given us against Mexico, not just once, but twice over the past couple of weeks. I think all of us look forward to watching you grow from strength to strength in the months and years to come, no matter what path you choose. Jordan Morris, Godspeed.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. This was great. Really appreciate it.
Seems like such a lovely young man, Rog.
Modest, yeah. Grounded. What a thoughtful bloke, Davo. When he scores the 2018 World Cup winner, we can say...
I thought it was Beckerman. It's not Beckerman anymore. Couldn't Jordan Morris is getting guy. It. Okay, on to the Ravens. From Max Smith. I'm opening a new restaurant in Columbus, Ohio later this year. Good luck to you, Max. With these names under consideration.
Can you sound a bit more optimistic? That was not your great idea, Max. That was your, good luck.
We're going to support. We'll support your restaurant. Okay. But these are the names under consideration for the restaurant, Rog. El Aguero, Le Coquelin, Ifelani or La Nemanja? Looking to draw a trendy crowd, please advise. Well, first of all, who does he support? He's got a City player, an Arsenal player, a Man United player, and a Chelsea player.
He supports good food, hospitality, and bonhomie.
Yeah.
In a family affordable price setting, I think. But I learned this question because Davo,
yeah.
You know how President Bush used the presidency as a stepping stone to fulfill his dreams of one day becoming MLB commissioner?
Yeah.
Davo is using Men in Blazers to fulfil his dreams of...
I'm only doing this so that I can own a pub.
Yeah, well, we talked a lot about one day opening a Men in Blazers pub. Men in Blazers, pies,
yeah,
Guinness.
Well, I know what I'm going to call the pub, Rog.
Football, the taste of Tweed.
Yeah.
That's what I'd call it if we had a restaurant.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to call it Men in Blazers,
you
the
are?
Pub. Yeah. Why confuse the brand?
Okay, so you can't do that in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah.
Matt, so what should he do, David?
Well, Le Coquelin is interesting because it sounds like a good French restaurant, Le Coquelin. Ifelani, I think that's probably the most well-known of any of those names, but I think I'd worry that there's going to be hair in my suit.
Yeah,
I don't want
waiter,
to.
Waiter.
I don't want to. Did you see the pictures of Fellaini and his identical twin brother?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of hair in that suit.
I've met his brother.
El Aguero.
You wouldn't go there. Unless
no.
It was rainy.
La Nemanja. Manja. La Nemanja. Vicious in the tackle, Rog. You're gonna get glassed.
Yeah,
Lanemania.
You'd only call it that if Skirtle was the only other name available for your restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say you've got to look at your audience. 6.5% of Columbus's population, David.
Yeah.
English. So
yeah.
Call it Leighton Baines. I'd love to call a restaurant Leighton Baines.
Yeah.
Or you could call it Michael Carrot.
Yeah.
Get the vegetarian
good.
Crowd, the Man United crowd, and the vegetarian.
Or Queen's Park Raisins would be a good name for a restaurant.
You could call it Harry Kane's Flash in the Pan.
Yeah.
Very good name, I think, for a sporty restaurant. Also, Dave, I'll look this one up, and this is mildly terrifying. Huge German population, 18% of Columbusan people.
Uh-huh.
How do you say it? Columbusan. Columbus.
Colombians.
They're German.
Columbusauruses.
They're German, David.
Yeah.
And I knew that because of Schmidt's House of Sausage, which is one of my favourite restaurants in America. I love any establishment that spells house.
Oh. House! Well, can't he call it Smith's House of Sausage? Isn't that a much better name for Max Smith's
and
restaurant?
Spell it H-O-U-S-E.
Yes, Smith's House of Sausage. Surely is what he should call it.
I think you should call it after Permuter.
I would go to Smith's House of Sausage. In fact, I would order takeout from Smith's House of Sausage, even if I had to wait for it to get here from Columbus.
Sod that. I'm not saying Columbus is a parochial place, but here's our suggestion.
Okay.
Call it Frankie Hedgehog's.
Frankie Hedgehog's.
Yeah. It's possibly the best name for a restaurant in your local vicinity.
Oh.
Where everybody knows you. You call it Frankie Hedgehog's, and I'll tell you, they'll be shooting pundits in the more pundits in the pub there before we know it.
Yeah, I know that if I went to Frankie Hedgehog's, the only guy there is going to be Jeff Agus.
You think?
He's going to be the only guy there.
Just opening bottles, beer bottles with his teeth and then smashing them against his own head. It'll be amazing. I drink there at Hedgehog's. Meet me down at Frankie Hedgehog's.
Well, I hope we've been some help, Max. The winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet, Philosopher, Soccer Scribe, Raven of the Week is McKinley Sims, Rog. Rog and Davo, yes. McKinley writes, my upcoming nuptials at the end of May.
Oh, mazel tov.
Congratulations. Are causing me a lot of stress. Rog said both of those things. I didn't say either of them. A lot of stress. Not
Davo's
because
holding
up I'm
notes.
Worried about starting a new life with the world's most amazing woman.
Well done.
But because my year-long engagement coincides almost exactly with my introduction to the beautiful game of soccer and thus a gloriously sad napful English Premier League season of supporting Spurs. I'm sorry. My future wife and her family support the football played on pitches in kits and boots, but my family is from Texas and Friday Night Lights is basically a video version of our Big Bottom Biggs family scrapbook. They wouldn't understand if I tried to tell them about getting up early to watch the EPL on a Saturday morning, looking for jazz hands and praising the works of Real Madrid's Harry Kane. My dilemma is this. How can I help these two opposing forces of nature coexist in the same space during the upcoming wedding? Can those who love American football ever learn to live with those who love soccer football? I planned on having a friendly sporting event the day before the big day to promote inter-family harmony.
Oh.
But if we play touch American football, will the in-laws refuse? And if we play a soccer derby, my family may disown me forever. Do you have suggestions for a compromise? I need advice on how to break the news to my relatives that I want to love Tottenham as much as I love the Dallas Cowboys. And y'all are my only hope. Love, McKinley.
God, this is a serious one.
Yeah.
There could be ramifications here, David.
I should say, Rog does not believe in compromise. Rog is not a man who believes in compromise, in my experience.
It's my only good quality. But listening to this predicament, David,
yeah,
it reminds me of that line from Annie Hall when Diane Keaton tells Woody Allen, "You're what Grammy Hall would call a real Jew."
Yeah.
Only in this case, he's scared of his own family. That's what I don't
know.
I thought when I first read
it,
I thought
it was
in-laws.
The other way around, yeah.
I mean, by the way, your family sound like they're in lockstep with the dead Jack Kemp when he said on the floor of Congress in 1986, a distinction should be made that football is democratic capitalism, whereas soccer is a European socialist sport. Essentially, you're asking, how do you out yourself as a soccer-loving American to your own family?
Yeah, but surely his family know. It's just about celebrating it on that weekend.
I'm not sure his family know yet, David.
Oh, really?
I think that from that reading, a close read of that letter,
uh-huh,
I think he needs to out himself completely.
This is my advice.
Yeah.
Do what you... This is always my wedding advice.
By the way, other GFOPs may have better advice
than
David.
This is all... Yeah, certainly than me. But this is my wedding advice, Rog. Have the wedding that you want. Don't throw the wedding for your guests, including your family members. You have to make the decisions that please you. This is your day and your lovely wife's day. Do what you want. If you want to play soccer and football or some combination of the two sports or not play either of them, do what you want, McKinley.
Oh, I think you've got two choices, McKinley. Number one is probably the one after some careful thought that I would advise, which is don't do it. Repression. Always in predicaments, repression solves 7 out of 10 problems, Davo. Or you could have a 3-step plan to out yourself as a soccer fan to Texan, NFL-loving, college football-believing...
Dad.
...believers. And step one, just ease them in by showing them Stoke City play Aston Villa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 3 yards and a cloud of dust football.
Yeah.
Number two, try and accentuate the socialist structure of American Major League sports.
Mm-hmm.
See if they bite on the entrepreneurial and bridal display of capitalism inherent in the Premier League. A lot of Americans like that.
Yeah.
Well, number three, you could just go for it. Just blurt it out and pray that when you come out to your parents, and I wouldn't be surprised if this happens, your parents will immediately counter come out to you.
Yeah.
Your dad will say, thank God you said that. I didn't know how to tell you.
I watched Formula One.
But your mum and I have fallen in love with Robbie Mustang. Your mum adores Mesut Ozil, and I'm a huge Emre Can fan.
Yeah.
We just didn't know how to summon the words to tell you. So that would be my advice. Probably either do the first thing, repression, or do that number three thing. Just dive into the cold pool and take the pain. I'll say courage. And in your dad's words, I'll say clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose.
Your weekend.
No raping.
Your weekend looked like this. That is a reference to the Amy Schumer sketch. Watch it. It's a parody.
Unbelievable.
Your weekend looks
brilliant.
Like this. Leicester City versus Newcastle, 7:45 a.m. on Saturday. Chelsea versus Palace, 8:30 a.m. on Sunday. Spurs versus City, 11 a.m. on Sunday. All games are on NBCSN. And in an MLS, Sporting Kansas City versus the Chicago Fire, 5 p.m. Eastern, Sunday on ESPN2. I'm hoping to go and see NYCFC play against Seattle on Sunday night. Don't know if I'm going to be able to make it there. I have some other television commitments. There are many ways to connect to us at Men in Blazers. One is through our Amazon Emporium. Helps keep the show going. Anytime you go to Amazon for items big or small, click off the Emporium page at meninblazers.com. Men in Blazers gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the cost of creating the show. What are you putting in the Emporium this week, Rog? Is it a book?
It's a book.
Oh.
John Cheever, Collected Stories and Other Writings, The Library of America, volume number 188.
Uh-huh.
A book I picked up to prep for Matt Wiener-Weiner coming on the show.
Yeah. Nobody reads Cheever in the UK, Rog.
Well, Mad Men sparked a renaissance,
yeah,
apparently, over here, even, of the writer who's known as the Chekhov of the suburbs. I'd love to be known as the Chekhov of the suburbs.
That'd You'd have to live in the suburbs, Rog.
Yeah. And he'd have to be Russian. He's a gent whose short stories undermine that suburban post-war dream, make you realise that the old people of the greatest generation were, in Matt Weiner's words, more carnal than we are, drunker, less responsible, more violent. Matt made a tradition of starting every season of Mad Men in the writer's room by reading Cheever's introduction to this volume aloud. And I'll say that introduction is worth buying the book for that page and a half alone.
Roger, I'm not putting in a book. I know this will shock you. I'm putting in the Balance Rocker Board, 14 by 15 inches. It's made of wood with traction strips. Roger, believe in building my core, believe in getting better balance. I'm getting older. I'm going to be 50 next year, Roger. Need to continue to work on my pursuit of abdominal muscles, Roger. I want abs before I turn 50.
and I want better balance. Need better balance to help me in all my working out. It's a bargain at $40.42. You can take it to the office. You can balance at the office. You can balance while you're watching the Premier League. It's a lot of fun.
I'm on a fitness regime at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. That might be my book for next week, the Steve Bruce diet.
Yeah.
I'm following it religiously.
I'm thinking of writing a fitness book with my dad. How to work out 30 minutes a week in your own clothes and only do your biceps. Could be a big hit. Rog. Okay, we're now on Apple TV, Rog.
What?
We're on Apple TV, the Men in Blazers, via NBC Sports.
Another place not to watch us.
Yeah, I know. We apologise
for that. Why would you watch on Apple TV when you can control when you watch us? Why would you not just keep trying to watch us on NBC Sports and
go
through the surprise of knowing when Jeremy Roenick says, lads, you can be on. No, I was kidding.
It's a treasure hunt.
They always say on the hockey, next is Men in Blazers. Next being maybe 3 days' time, 4 days. They keep talking.
I can tell our show's doing well, though, Rog, because they're selling more ads in it. They went and sold an ad break right in the middle of one of our pieces last night. It's so valuable, the time.
Yeah, really
they've just got a commercial in the middle of the action.
By the way, when we were just about to talk about Everton's only glorious win of the season.
Yeah, commercial break.
NBC blocked it out, blotted it out with ads.
Yeah.
I think Louis van Gaal may be a Mason.
that seems to be, maybe. I think that's a dead certainty, Rog.
Say one more thing.
Yeah.
I've been working on, say no more, all I say, I've been working on our way of showing support for the big one at the World Cup and the American team.
Yeah.
All I say is we're working on a very beautiful I hope it's very beautiful, a collaboration with Mitchell and Ness.
Yeah, I saw some of the work today, Rog.
Oh, they are a clothing company that I have long admired.
Yeah.
Ever since I got their Philadelphia Spurs jersey about 10 years ago.
Philadelphia?
Spurs.
Oh, wow.
So they used to be the champions of America, the Philadelphia, Southern Philadelphia Hebrew Association.
Wow.
Before they invented dunking.
We recently released Men in Blazers Unbuttoned. Now, that's what I call suboptimal. Volume 2, Rog, the best of 2014, on iTunes, Amazon and Google Play. It's the most suboptimal moments from a year in which Liverpool nearly won the league and the USA nearly won the World Cup. Have a listen and then a sad nap. Check out our Spotify account, men_in_blazers. Our third mixtape, the Sad Nap Edition, is now up. menandblazers.wickedspaces.com/. That's a wonder of the modern world, Rog. And www.meninblazers.com. That's our website. You can read all about us there. You can sign up for our newsletter, The Raven, which we produce with our partner Guinness. Follow us on Twitter at Rog Bennett, at Men in Blazers, at Embassy Davies. On Instagram, at Men in Blazers and at Embassy_Davies. And we're on Facebook too. We got a subreddit, Rog.
Yeah.
Meninblazers.reddit.com, maintained by GFOP's Akshay, Calvin, and Alex.
Three blokes who believe in trial by combat instead of paying. Car finds.
Yeah, certainly. And you can always send your ravens to the crap part of Soho.
How do you
can email us at meninblazers@gmail.com. What was this? Trial by combat, trial by fire?
Yeah.
Was there not?
And there was also trial by dunking, which I never understood.
No, witches. They used to throw them in the river and see if they floated.
If they floated, they were witches. Yeah. If they drowned, they were not
witches.
They were
dead. And they were dead.
God,
it seemed very unfair.
Well, as a child, I spent a lot of time wondering which was better.
Yeah. I wrote my thesis on that in law school. Vendorpunk Rog.
Are you trying to bring it back?
Yeah, absolutely.
Why the
for youth offenders. Vendorpunk Rog.
No, you didn't.
I didn't do that. No, Vendorpunk Rog.
Even you wouldn't.
Vendorpunk Rog. Vendorpunk. Vendorpunk Rog.
War Pig.
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Explosion.
Courage.
Size the day.
Is that your analysis?
Lean to linen.
Abrigado. Rock on, mate.
Kung Fu fighting America. Take that, Gloria. Take that, Louis van Gaal. No to dunking.
Love you, Rog.
Love you, David.